As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Wind-Up.
And that is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field! It is out of here!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
You're listening to The Roundtable on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 89 of the Baseball Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy McCullough and Mark Carrick. I wrote a poem in honor of Mark returning. It starts, "Guess who just got back today? Them wild-eyed boys that had been away. Haven't changed, had much to say, but man, I still think them cats are crazy. The boys are back in town, Mark. I know you're confused. Just the look on your face made that worth it."
I mean, the look on my face is like, this is like too long. You need to cut it in half.
No, the boys are back in town. Mark, how are you doing?
Man, this is the best day ever. I'm back with you fellas. This is the best version of this universe. It's right here, right now.
That Katie's here pretty good.
No, not really. I'm just kidding.
Tim's pretty good. Fappy, I mean, listen, they all got their own perks.
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, they all watch baseball.
This is the best. This is the OG. I'm glad to be here.
We're glad
to have
you.
This is wonderful. I actually miss doing this every week. This beats doing the crap I have to do usually. This is wonderful. I love it. It's good to see you both.
That fired me up. Andy, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm in Washington, D.C., where the Dodgers are. So I'm in a hotel room.
Is it a Marriott?
Course, dude. What kind of question is that, Grant? See, like, Grant, like, you're not, I don't want to get into it.
And then
like,
he shows his ass that he doesn't.
Yeah, that's just,
that's what
yeah,
I get that's mad just about. A,
that's right. Yeah. I'd love to. Mark, how are you on travel budgets?
I'd find some to send your ass on the road.
Yeah.
Would make that happen. Did you sign up for
it? Grant, why should we have to pay for you to leave your home to go to your mom's basement?
Got him.
Yeah. I don't know.
Why should we have to pay for the mileage on that?
Expense the Uber, yeah. All right. Today is a special day because on The Athletic, we have a big to-do. This is a collaboration between Andy, Patrick Mooney, Tyler Kepner. They polled 40 executives about the top 10 front offices in baseball. So it's got the combination of a ton of work went into it. It's not them in their opinion, so they can't get yelled at.
You'd be surprised.
Well, it's not your fault. But at the same time, it's just fascinating stuff. So we're going to spend a lot of time because it's going to dovetail into current events with baseball. I mean, this team's up here, but they're playing like this or vice versa. Andy, talk about the process, what it took. How did Mark feel about the word count? It's pretty lengthy.
Is it? Mark? I thought, Mark, we were fine about the word count.
No, that he wrote to length. Grant, yeah. That means writing to the prescribed length of the story at assignment, and he did that.
Not one Simpsons reference.
Yeah,
he could have used that. Could have used that. All right, Andy, how did it come about? Thoughts? What'd you learn?
Grant's theory is, you know, he's like the Marxist writing. He's like, from each according to his own ability, to each according to however long he wants the story to be. It was not, certainly I did a decent chunk of the writing, but there was a ton of reporting that folks at the company did, you know, as you mentioned, Tyler Kepner, Patrick Mooney, Jason Stark, I think Trent Rosecrans, possibly Katie Wu. Like we just kind of fanned out and we're basically, I think it's going to be maybe a company-wide initiative that some other of the verticals are going to be doing. But we were kind of the test case because we're in season. And so just trying to talk to basically people who either are GMs or have been GMs and remain in front offices, you know, like not folks who were GMs and are now in the media, and just asking them like, hey, you know, who do you think are the best front offices in baseball? Give us your top five and, you know, why and what, you know, what sort of goes into it. And, you know, we did, we tried to, you know, it's similar to like the ACES project, right? Is where you try and basically form a consensus as best you can. You know, you don't just want to ask one person who's the best pitcher in baseball, but you try and get, you know, 20 people. And then if there's one at the top. And so anyway, yeah, we talked to 40 people. There were 18 first place votes for the Dodgers and 12 first place votes for the Rays. So pretty much gives you a sense. I mean, it was one of those things coming in where I would have been pretty shocked if the voting didn't go, you know, Dodgers, Rays, Braves. And that is how it ended up going. And then I think after that, you know, it's kind of, it's pretty interesting. I think you really see, you see sort of like a real homogeneity of opinion at the top. And then four and five for the various ballots, like they were, I thought those were really interesting. And so it's a cool project. I hope everyone checks it out, but I'd be curious, you know, what you guys thought about it as well.
I think it's fascinating just because it asks so many questions just by presenting the information, right? You get this information and then you look at the Dodgers at the top, and I know the knee-jerk response is, well, give me $300 million and I'll sign it, right? Like, sure. You just know that that's going to be the case. So it's like, imagine if they didn't have the money. Well, that's kind of Andrew Friedman's story. He started with the Rays. He proved he could do it there, moved to the Dodgers. He's blending both worlds. At the same time, is not what the Rays doing, the most impressive thing in baseball, give or take. But then you go back to the Braves and look at how well they're set up for the future. But who was GM when Ronald Acuna and Ozzie Albies were brought in the system? Was like Frank Wren, you know? And it's how much credit. And so you're trying to pull all these threads together to weave a rich tapestry. And I don't think that there's a right answer other than, yeah, probably Dodgers, Rays, Braves.
Yeah, that, I think, first off, what I love about the project the most is that we're asking experts on this. So as Andy said, it's not just 40 randos. It's 40 people who have either sat in the chair, are sitting in the chair, or run a department. That was the other part of this. Like it has to be people that are in a decision, some kind of decision-making capacity. You know, they're in the room, so to speak, when things happen, that, you know, are in charge of, you know, if they're not in charge of the entire org's baseball operations, then it's like a significant portion of it, right? Like folks running important departments. So these are people who would know, basically, right? Like these are folks who would understand either through maybe their past experience having passed through a front office or dealing with them, let's say, in some kind of negotiation or whatever, folks that would have an informed opinion. And one of the rules is you can't vote for your own team. Right? Like, so this is really about perceptions and sort of, because of the cross-section of people that we went after, I think the insights were better. And I thought one thing Andy did really well here was, and this happened right off the top, organizations are these complicated machines. There's a lot of people and a lot of things that got to get done. The more complicated, the more difficult it is to do it well consistently. Right? I think fans kind of see a GM and they just think about the transactions, the moves they make. And while certainly that's a big part of it, that's only a part of it. A lot of this, and we saw this in the mention of the Minnesota Twins, it's about establishing good culture. It's about maintaining and keeping your talent, right? Not just your players, but in your front office. It's the idea of, okay, is this a place, just like any other workplace, am I going to show up here and get better at what I'm doing? Am I going to grow? These things matter a lot. And I thought it was super interesting that you could see those elements when you read this. This is beyond just, oh, yeah, they do a good job drafting. Like, yes, maybe they do. But there's so much more to that when it comes to being a good organization. And I think another thing that was good about this, and Andy mentioned this too, there's limits to how you measure that, because some of this is, who are you working for? Everybody has a boss. You might be the team president. You're reporting to the owner. Is the owner doing what they're supposed to do, or what they need to do, not just spending money, but also in how they work and operate? And those are harder questions to answer. So as comprehensive as this is, and as interesting as this is, and I think super insightful, I also think it's very upfront about the limitations that it has. And let's start with the owners, obviously, which we've talked about here a lot, all right? Like, that person's going to influence a ton. And no matter how good you are at organizing something, you might not be able to overcome that necessarily.
I think it's interesting, too, if you look at the top five is Dodgers, Rays, Braves. Four is the Guardians, and then five is the Orioles. Of that five, and we're going to use John Angelos as the Orioles owner, because that was kind of when, you know, we don't know what the new felt. What's the new guy's name?
Dirk.
What is
Cal Ripken's group? I don't know.
I have read this so many times.
I know.
I was so, like,
you know, the new guy, the guys, they're, you know, they might spend a little bit more money, right?
Rubenstein.
David Rubenstein, right?
Yes.
If you look at those five owners, right, you got Mark Walter, who I think folks around the game would tell you they would very much enjoy to work in that environment. Stu Sternberg, who does not spend a ton of money on players per se, but they do have a very robust infrastructure. They have a ton of scouts. They spend money there. But then you got Liberty Media, right? Then you have, you know, Dolan, who is not known for, you know, financing, and you know, Angelos. And so, like, I think it was interesting in that, you know, it's not just as simple as, like, who's number one, you know, the Dodgers, who's number two, the Yankees, who's number three, the Mets, you know, all because the owners, you know, are just spending and spending and spending. You know, the Padres, you know, who were financed so well under Seidler, did not receive votes. So I do think there is some of the accounting that went in these conversations is, like, the Dodgers are in this incredible position where they have Andrew Friedman, who is more or less considered the best in the sport at doing this job. But they also have the owner, who is more or less considered the best at, you know, giving money. And they just tend to make the big decisions the best, you know, outside of some notable exceptions, which we got into in the story. But I do think that, you know, when you're talking to the execs, they bake into the account, like, managing up, managing down, all those things.
The common thread between all those teams, it's not the owners, it's not the payroll, it's not necessarily the GMs. It is when you ask the question, given the resources, given the limitations, given the context, who's the best at this, right? If you are given unlimited resources, if you're given limited, but to an extent, but if you're given just the highest payroll in the game, and what you do with that, what's about the best you can do with it? Well, it's what the Dodgers are doing with it. They're attracting stars. They're drawing the fans in. They've got the minor leagues are humming. It's a conveyor belt of players for the most part. They've got enough prospects to trade. They're making those trades. They're making smart trades, stuff like that. Given those resources, I'm not sure what they could do better, you know, at least in the regular season. And then it goes to the Braves. Okay, well, now you've got this front office and they had some legacy homegrown players who blossomed. You had this. What's the best you can do? Well, make sure they're around for a while and make the right trades. When someone leaves, like Freddie Freeman in free agency, replace him. You know, that's about the best you can do. When you're the Guardians, what do you have? Well, you got an owner that's not exactly going to spend on anyone who's not Jose Ramirez, and bless him for accepting an owner-friendly contract, but you're going to cobble together, you're going to have a pitching factory, you're going to have this. So that's what all those teams have in common, and that's the secret sauce. But every team's going to be different, and they're all going to have different curves on which to grade. Blew your goddamn minds.
One thing that was kind of interesting for me was kind of getting the divergent opinions on the Orioles, I guess, because I know that I talked to, and the Orioles scored very highly on here, and I know that there was, I don't want to say bitterness, but there was some, maybe a bit of envy that they were able to go through that tank. I think the difference is that they really do seem to have drilled it on the drafting side. It's early, you know, it's really early. You don't want to say, like, you know, Gunnar Henderson had a great year last year. Adley Rutschman had a great year last year. But, like, you don't want to say that, you know, Colton Cowser is going to be, you know, a perennial all-star. Jordan Westberg.
Heston Kutchen.
Yes, exactly. You know, all those guys, right? If you look at it on paper, you're like, this, they really do seem to have done, given where they are right now in the rebuilding cycle, they could not have done it better, it seems like, on the drafting and development part. And I think some executives were sort of like, well, they were so bad for so long, of course they're going to get, you know, those good players. And it's like, well, I don't know, man. Teams whiff in the draft. I mean, like, the Houston Astros didn't do that, for example, right? Like, the Houston Astros did a hard tank. They didn't drill the draft in this way.
Yeah, but they did get Bregman and Correa. That front
and
office.
Mark Appel.
Yeah, for sure.
And Brady
for sure.
Aiken.
For sure. And they were also gifted a Jose Altuve from the previous front office. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yes, they did get Correa. They did get Bregman. They did get Lance McCullers. But they Springer. Also blew 2-1-1s. I think Springer predates Lunau. But, you know, they blew 2-1-1s. Right?
That's hard
Which,
to do.
As of right now, it appears the Orioles have not done. And I think, you know, so now it's going to be a question of can they, you know, they demonstrated the patience and the, you know, sort of the acumen to get to this point. Now it's like, well, can they do it on the big league, like sort of scouting side? And the first big move they made was acquiring Corbin Burns. So that's, you know, it's not bad.
I will say that I do understand that concern because Adley Rutschman, I could have been on the toilet. You could have called me and be like, who do you want 1-1? And it's like Adley Rutschman. And then I hang up. You know what I mean? Like that took nothing. He was such an obvious 1-1. But at the same time, like building everything else below that does take a lot. So I get that complaint.
Yeah. But like my counter though is like, what about Joey Bart? What about Andrew Vaughn? You know, like you can get polished, you know, college level players who don't pan out. And again, Rutschman, like he's panned out per se. It's one full year of the, you know, okay, I get it, all that. But like, it seems pretty clear he's going to be a good player for a long time in a way that Bart did not become that, in a way that Vaughn is clearly struggling. You know, you can whiff on a top five college position player.
I remember when the Giants are bad, we would say tank for Torque, Spencer Torkelson, you know, and it's like
tank for Torque. I think maybe some of what the responses were more a reaction to envy that their market would not allow for a hard tank. Well, that's one part of this. Remember, like not every market can actually do it, even if it's the right thing to do, right? Like there's a lot of considerations involved there from the business end. You still have, even if the team is winning, you know, no games, you still need people to somehow come, right? Like you can't totally got it like that in some places. The other part of this is, and I think it is so easy to forget that there's nothing guaranteed with a hard tank. Like if you've watched the Detroit Tigers, like, you know, White like Sox. This is, they did that too. So, you know, no, it is not easy. And also you need luck. You need Adley Rutschman to be the sit on the toilet, obvious number one draft. Like the timing has to work. And that's an entirely a function of luck. So I don't know. You look at the Baltimore Orioles, that certainly seems like a hard tank that worked, but like, let's not, you know, pretend that that's an automatic, you know, they needed some luck. They needed some skill. They needed some combination of all of it. They've gotten it to this point. It looks like good for them. But you know, if there's front office people saying that stuff, oh man, of course they did that. Like, yeah, man, maybe you're forgetting how hard it is to actually pull that off.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
Look at the White Sox. I mean, the White Sox are at this point under 500, and they did the full tank. They did the whole kit and caboodle, and now they are one of the worst teams that this sport has ever seen, it would appear, or something close to it. And then you get to number 10 on the front office rankings, and it's the Yankees. Yankees can't rebuild. They can't tank. They can't lose 105 games for three straight years and get some number one picks to fill up the coffers. And that's when you have the quote where it's Brian Cashman, one executive said, is severely underrated. Yeah, they got resources, but it takes a culture. It takes like a different sort of infrastructure to not be under 500 since Derek Jeter was drafted. That's a skill. That's not something that every front office could do.
I was watching a game recently, Yankee game, and you know.
Why were you at the dentist office?
Wait, what?
Well, I'm just curious. Like, where were you at the doctor's? Why was the game?
Oh, is this
on?
A shot at me not watching? Oh, I see.
I was just curious. Like, I don't know.
It's gonna be happening like that for this episode. Okay. So no, I was at home. I had the game.
Well,
on.
Well, we know that.
Yeah, okay. Here we go. God damn it! All right. Fine, I'll cop to it. My wife had the game on. All right.
Exactly. So there it is. Truth comes
Mrs.
out.
Mrs. C has a game on because she's a huge Yankee fan. And, you know, people in New York know this. There's this undercurrent about the analytics department being this boogeyman here, that where everything is their fault, right? And so it permeates everything, I feel like. And like, look, I don't think some of that is untrue. Like, I think there have been times where they could have executed better on some of these concepts. But this is what I find very – this is a very Yankee experience. So on the one hand, they're so pitcher comes in the game. Here's another person the Yankees have unearthed that can throw hard and put spin on the ball and be useful for them, going on and on about how great that is. And then it's – you know, the next statement is like – I hate how they call them sweepers. This analytics has gone too far. Right? It's like, geez, you guys, yeah, like, don't yeah. you see, like, why? The reason they keep finding these guys is because of those analytics, okay? Partly because of their investment in it and their attempts to try to execute it. And now, are those attempts to execute it perfect? No. But I think the biggest thing that Brian Cashman did there is, like, one of the hardest things to do in any kind of management. He changed their culture in a significant way. It used to be a place where when Steinbrenner was around and like his presence was outsized, the people advising him would seemingly change from month to month, year to year. So imagine in that environment, and when there was a point in their organization's history where this was the case, you have that element still going on, and there are other people kind of coming to analytics and seeing the value in this. How do you think they're able to go from that stuff being marginalized within their own organization to being a centerpiece of what they do? It's Brian Cashman. It's effective management. It's getting people on the same page. And you can argue, did they go too far with that? And we can talk about that and whatever. But the point is, he got them to move that way. And by the way, the results on the field, they haven't had a losing season in two generations. So there are actual Yankee fans with kids that are grown up that have never seen them have a losing season. That's not an accident.
I love that the example you used was all of a sudden they're complaining about calling it a sweeper, because that is what the gap between what people think analytics is and what it actually is now. There are still people who are like, they think that the front offices hold a meeting and it's like, we got to take more walks. You know, we're not driving that on base percentage up anymore. Like we gotta get that OBP up. And no, it's like taking, hey, we drafted Clark Schmidt in the middle of the first round and he's doing this well, but we could make it better. We could make that pitch do this more and miss more bats and executing it to where he's like coming into his own at 28, maybe. That's the sign of a good front office. That's the sign. It's finding Nestor Cortez and Loaisiga. Like that's the sign of a good front office as much as, hey, we signed this guy and we traded for this guy, and people don't give Cashman any credit for Volpe or, you know, stuff like that. The development side of it, and to complain about analytics, it's missing. It's like an argument from 2002 on rec sport baseball.
Look, I think the point that Mark made, you can debate whether they've gone too far with it. I think that when they have had decisions that have looked like mistakes in the past, you can point to data that they were relying on that felt a little faulty, you know, for example, believing in Joey Gallo despite his obvious challenges as a player, you know, citing things like Josh Donaldson's exit velocity when there was less sort of regard given to what he was doing to generate that exit velocity and how it was affecting his approach, things like that. However, the point Mark made, and friend of the show, Andy Martino, has a book about the Yankees coming out later this month that I'm looking forward to reading because it's about the Brian Cashman era. And one of the things that I think is really, you know, fascinating about these Yankees over the last 30 years is that despite the success that they had at various times under George Steinbrenner, like it was a very chaotic work environment. And there were warring fiefdoms for years and years and years, you know, in Tampa and New York and, you know, all these different people. And Brian Cashman unified that front office and got them sort of all moving in the same direction. And you can argue, you know, as we've talked about a lot on the show, of like, you know, the sort of things that they seem to do wrong versus the things they're very clearly doing right. But they're in a position where they have a winning record every year. They have not developed the stars through the draft and international market, maybe that, you know, for example, like the Dodgers have. However, they have developed this sort of surplus and prospect, you know, sort of capital to, you know, use a non-labor friendly phrase, to be there when Juan Soto is just like kind of sitting out there. And it's like, oh, wow, well, you know, we can give you like these four guys, you know, for Juan Soto. It's like, oh, now we have Juan Soto. He's probably going to like it here. Hal Steinbrenner has, you know, $500 million to pay him in the offseason, like whatever, match made in heaven, all that type of stuff. And I think that the skill that it took for Cashman to, you know, to basically unite that sort of fractious work environment is something that is really, really notable. And, you know, that doesn't mean they're infallible. They're clearly not infallible. We've talked, you know, especially in 2022, we talked a ton just about like, you know, that. And they're kind of drifting into that range again this year, right? They look like a team that's going to win 96 games. And the whole time you're like, are they good or I don't know. But, right, they look like they're going to be back in the postseason. You know, they look like they're going to be pretty good. And it's what they are. You know, they're a really well-run organization.
I say a lot of nerdy things on this podcast, but I think the way you're describing Cashman and how he, you know, he unified all those different factions makes me think that the 2009 World Series ring makes him invisible, right? Because it's the one ring to, like, it's a Lord of the Rings reference. Is that too much? Brian, how are we doing on editing?
Dude, I've never seen Lord of the Rings.
Have you really?
No, I was on the football team, dude. Come on.
I've never seen it. I tried for the first one. I couldn't stay awake. So anyway,
no, it couldn't be me. All right.
But whatever, like nerd. Anyway, look, the Yankees need to start winning pennants and World Series. Like, I think that is obvious and a fair knock given their expectations. Now, that said, when Andy's talking about the warring fiefdoms, that almost doesn't do it justice. What Cashman had to deal with. All right. Trying to pull that together and make that functional. It was not easy what he pulled off. And so the fact that his peers are putting this guy in the top 10, I think says something, despite the fact they haven't won a pennant since 2009. All right. Like, and they're still putting him in this group. And there's a bunch of teams here that have not only won a pennant in that time, have won World Series that didn't get a single vote. All right. And that is because Cashman has done these things that are incredibly difficult to do for pushing 25 years, 30 years now. All right. Getting people to pull the same direction is messy and hard and all those things. And yet he's pulled it off. All right. And keeps pulling it off. So that's, I think that is telling that they would rank in the top 10, despite some of the on-field success. Like, while they have had winning seasons, they haven't won a pennant yet. There they are.
What do you think about the reigning World Series champions, Texas Rangers, front office not getting a single first place vote? They did finish eighth in a tie. Not one single first place vote, which I guess, you know, Dodgers, Rays, Braves, tough company. But they are behind, or they're tied with the Twins, for example. The Twins did not win the World Series last year. We forgot about them when ranking World Series teams.
Well, one, it's reflective of not just, you know, viewing things on the continuum of like an individual season, right? Because I think the Rangers, obviously, you know, we wrote about this, you know, during the postseason, with the job Chris Young did, especially at the trade deadline, the aggression, you know, the way that he's sort of been able to instill a vision in the organization, you know, the decision to hire Bruce Bochy, which has looked, you know, inspired. And it was the sort of thing that when they hired Bruce Bochy, I'm sure there were a lot of people, and maybe even a small part of me was like, they're doing what? Like, you know, like, I thought he retired, like, you know, okay. And he's like, still pretty freaking good at this, you know, like, that's a really good decision. The, you know, the trades they made, as I said, being able to bring in Corey Seager and Simeon, you know, have paid dividends. But, you know, you look at, they were a really bad team in 2022, you know, so bad that they fired their manager and their chief executive, John Daniels. They were not a particularly good team in 2021. They were not a particularly good team in, you know, 2020. Like, you know, so it's like, that's not to say that the, you know, and a lot of the current group, you know, has remained in place, you know, like Josh Bonifay and stuff like that. You know, they've been there for several years, but the results are not as impressive over a, you know, series of years. If they have the season that it looks like they're going to have this year, right, would it be in postseason contention? And, you know, they set up the sort of run where they're doing this for 3, 4, 5 years. Yeah, they should be in the top five, because I think Chris Young has all of the characteristics of an elite chief executive. It's just more like the track record stuff. Like, they've done it one time. It's great. They got rings and everything out of it. They had a parade. You know, they have a banner that I guess had like a ruffle in it or something that was like a deal for a day. But when you're talking to people around the sport, they're like, yeah, you know, that was great. That was awesome. But like, the question is more about sustainability, and they sort of have to prove that they can do that. And I bet they will. Well, I wouldn't bet. I think that they will.
I definitely would bet. I don't disagree with anything you said. I'm kind of like spitting out what the peanut gallery might say. Like, I do, everything you said tracks. The whole thing is fascinating. So you look at the teams that didn't receive votes. One of them is the Cardinals. How long ago do you think the Cardinals would have been a top three team? Like, how far back do we have to go? I don't think it was that long ago.
Yeah, I mean, Oakland too, right? If you did this poll in 2019, I bet you the Cardinals and Oakland are in the top five.
Well, yeah, because Oakland just kept making the playoffs, which is unbelievable, right? Given what we're working with and all of that. And, you know, they were so ahead still on, you know, this idea of all those transactions, just winning a ton of transactions, you know, cycling through players, whatever. They were doing it the hard way, but making it work. So, yeah, it is fickle, right? For sure. There's an element of that. I mean, look, the Washington Nationals have a World Series championship in the last 5 years and didn't get a vote. Okay. And like, even as they've broken it down, right? Like, I don't know. Did he do a bad job of that? It's kind of too early to tell, but like, it's not like you can look at that and be like, wow, that was an epic fail and have to break it down. I don't know. Like, that doesn't feel like that yet. So anyway, there's limitations to this. And, you know, anytime you rank something, there's recency bias to, you know, to put into play and all that stuff. And hey, man, like, also maybe there's like, we asked 40 human beings. You have no idea what those rivalries and like personal issues are, right? Like, well, seriously, like, you could, you know.
You do if you're if you're conducting the interviews.
Well, yeah. Yes. True. That is a fair point. But like, you know, let's not ignore that. okay? Like, we tried to like spread it out, and I think 40 is a big number and all that stuff, but people are people. So, you know, like there's that, not infallible, but it is a good thought exercise.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
I mean, some of it, right, is just the product of the sort, you know, we specifically wanted to talk to like current, you know, top level executives, right? But I bet you if you, you know, if you surveyed, you know, some retired folks or you know, scouts or, you know, folks who are, if you expanded it out, I bet you Dave Dombrowski would have done a lot better.
That's true.
And I think the Phillies are, you know, I was surprised at the lack of, you know, sort of love that the Phillies have gotten, because I think that there still exists sort of the caricature per se of sort of what Dombrowski is as an exec, and sort of this, and you know, look, the Phillies, it's not like they've been a juggernaut for 7 or 8 years, but it's very clear, you know, what Dombrowski's real skills are. I think he's done an excellent job specifically building bullpens in Philadelphia, you know, and that was seen as something that was a real weakness of his earlier at different stops of his career. You know, they haven't like raised their farm system to, you know, sort of, you know, get like, you know, expiring contracts or whatever. I mean, I think like he's the most notable prospect he's dealt is probably Logan Ohop, and that was for Brandon Marsh, and that's been a pretty good deal. That was kind of a good baseball trade for both sides. So, yeah, I mean, I think that would be the one club who I feel like the Yankees and the Phillies maybe probably should have been a little bit higher. But I'm not the, you know, it's not my opinion that matters, right? We're talking to a bunch of different folks.
I'll take it back to the Nationals and Mike Rizzo, because we've got an interesting test case where, okay, so yes, Bryce Harper is a toilet 1-1, right? That's the phrase phrase now. That's what the industry calls
the toilet bowl one. Oh,
toilet bowl one. Right? Yeah, no, you're sitting on the toilet. Yeah, freaking get me the hopper guy, you know? Like, but then you've got, well, you know, then you're folding in other players and you've got this really nice arc and you're making these moves. And I remember when they signed Max Scherzer, the line was like, why do they need Max Scherzer? They already got all these guys. And no, that worked out. And now you've got a next era, same guy, and you've got CJ Abrams and Mackenzie Gore starting to, I mean, CJ Abrams already looked like a guy last year. He really looks like a guy this year. Mackenzie Gore is becoming the pitcher that everyone was expecting him to be 5 years ago. And this, if he pulls this off, I mean, if he can shepherd this Nationals team through another transition, another rise, I'm impressed as all heck. I'm already impressed as all heck. I think they're a much scarier team to face than they should be. I mean, it's just they're not like a good team, but they shouldn't be like halfway decent.
Yeah, I think the difference between a team like them and maybe the Rays or the Brewers, for example, is the fallow periods. They've been pretty not great for several seasons now. In a way that the Rays are always pretty good. And, you know, the Brewers are like, they're 87 to 94 year after year. You know, they traded Corbin Burns. They're probably going to win their division. Some of that, right, is the competition. Being in the East is a bit tougher than being in the Central. But I think it's just when you go through those fallow periods, you get, I don't want to say less respect, but it's like the teams that can kind of, you know, stay in that zone that us, you know, pro labor folks hate, of where they're like, we'll call it the Guardian zone, right? Where it's like, you're like, you know, and they've kind of they deviated a little bit last year, but you know, the Guardians for quite some time, it was like, hey man, 91, like we got a shot at it. Just aiming for that, you know, the thing, what Jerry DePoto said that made everyone mad when he just explained like how baseball works, when he was like, I want to win, you know, something like, like 65% of our games. Or whatever he said, you know, so yeah, it's like, I think that there is a, if you spend all day, you know, and your job is to like try and be in that zone, you harbor sort of more respect for the teams who are able to do that because you know how hard it is, if that makes sense.
Hey, the Brewers, who aren't big spenders and have at points actually cut payroll and still are competitive. And yes, you're playing in that division, but that's part of the calculation for what they're doing. They're only reacting to the conditions in front of them. Not easy to do. They pull it off pretty well. Here's one that was interesting to me, and it's not surprising. I just find it like, you know, there is a consequence of these things, but the Houston Astros have nothing but pennants. It feels like they're hanging in their building and they're 13th with 5 points, right? Yeah. So like that, and we know why, all right? So what would they be without the scandal?
Yeah, they would be in the top. Sorry, you're right. But they also like won the World Series and fired their GM. So it's more that, yes, without the scandal, right, life would be very different.
What were they be on this list, you think, if like the industry didn't despise them for being cheaters?
Well, the industry already kind of despised them.
You know what? That's true.
So
that's true.
Know, there was already, that's like, true. It's just, you're asking, I understand the general point.
No, you're right. You're right. You're right, though. You're right.
There, you know, they would have been in the top three, right? If the cheating scandal doesn't exist and is not a thing that happened, yeah, they're in there probably right up there with the Rays and the Dodgers. They might.
They're like the Orioles, basically.
Right? Well, they're the Orioles, same, except they won the World Series and they right. spend money.
No, but I meant like the Orioles, as far as like the responses you were getting, that like some people are just like, well, of course they tanked, blah, blah, blah. Like kind of like not giving their full due because they're annoyed by something.
I think the players, right, like Jose Altuve, for example, while he still has to, you know, Alex Bregman, they have to cart around the stink, for lack of a better term, of the scandal. I think around the industry, everyone looks at them and is like, no, those guys are really good. Like that, you know, they've sort of done enough post-scandal to make pretty clear that they probably didn't need to do whatever the heck they were doing, right? They made very clear they're very good. With Jeff Luhnow being fired, he has not been able to do that. He's, you know, last I checked was running like a soccer team in Spain, you know, so like he doesn't have that. He hasn't sort of gone through the like, well, I built another team up and I'm actually a good exec, you know? So it's just, yeah, it's very, it's kind of apples and oranges in some ways. I don't know.
No, the point is, and this is the thing that got me first. I was like, okay, if they didn't do any of that stuff, where would they rank? But the point that you make is something I had forgotten, which is before all of that, they weren't the most popular people in the game anyway.
Sure.
Like the, and which is kind of like what you expect out of folks who are trying to be disruptors. There's a reason that that's the term. Like, it annoys people. It, you know, like it doesn't sit well, some of the stuff they were doing. So, but I still think, yeah, they're probably the top five team.
That's a team someone should write a book about.
Uber, but for baseball teams. But I mean, the point is that they're still good. I mean, they're only two games behind the A's right now.
Right. Yeah, at some point, my power rankings vote might have to start reflecting what's actually happening. Because they kind of stink out loud right now.
Boy, everybody's hurt. Like, their pitchers are hurt, and like, they stink out loud.
See what Jose Abreu is doing these days?
Yeah.
Ooh. It is, what's he at now? It is 4 hits in 62 at-bats with 1 double, no other extra base hits. That is an 0.065 batting average, 2.13 OPS. If your OPS is your on-base percentage and it's still awful, that's a rough season.
It's no great, not great.
When they signed him a couple years ago, Keith Law panned it in The Athletic, and I remember going, shut up, Keith. They got Jose Abreu. Turns out he was right. So, you know.
When the Mariners signed Nelson Cruz, this is what I thought was going to happen. Like, it's just his sure, profile, yeah. Like, oh, he likes to chase the, you know, shut right. up, Grant was right. He was good for like another 10 years.
They're not very good right now. So this, you know, if this season, I think the issue with the Astros is just like when you're saying, okay, who's the best front office? It's like, okay, well, like, you know, Dana Brown just got there a year ago, right? And like Dana Brown, by the way, is someone who should, and I hopefully got this across in the piece, should receive a good chunk of credit for what's going on in Atlanta, you know, because as being, you know, they're sort of, you know, ahead of their amateur scouting and draft, like helped acquire, you know, bring in a lot of their talent. But like, you know, Dana Brown didn't really build that team, right? And then the previous GM, you know, the Clickster, James Click, like he won a World Series and went to another World Series, but he, you know, inherited a Ferrari that he sort of souped up. And then the guy who brought in a lot of the, it's just the continuum is a lot harder to evaluate in a way where you look at the Dodgers and be like, yeah, Andrew Friedman's been there, you know, and like you can't even say anymore with Friedman. It's like, well, look at all the talent he inherited. It's like Adrian Gonzalez retired like 6 years ago, right? You know, like you can't say like, well, look, I mean, he got Puig and Kemp. I mean, of course he had a great, you know, it's like these guys are not in baseball anymore.
Yeah, it is. He also inherited Kershaw. I would love to read more about Kershaw. Is there a place I can?
Yes, you can. On theathletic.com, Fabian Ardaia had an interview with him a week ago. Yeah, no, The Last of His Kind comes out in less than 2 weeks. Please pre-order it if you want to, you know, if you're a Roundtable head, please. That'd be really nice, you know, if you pre-ordered it or if you just ordered it when it comes out, but that would be cool. I would appreciate it. I do love the listeners. I love the Roundtable heads. They're really, it's a fun bunch.
I have a question.
Yeah, what's up, Mark?
Hey, is there like a preference to where to pre-order?
Just wherever, any you know, bookseller, you know.
Any bookseller, okay.
Yeah, you know, if you, I think if you want to, you know, support like your local indie, that would be cool. If it's easier for you to do it on like Amazon or Barnes & Noble, that's fine. I mean, you know, I think, you know, I often, there's a store in New York that I use called McNally Jackson. You know, sometimes I use Bookshop. You know, sometimes I just walk into the Barnes & Noble on Union Square. I mean, I'm not going to like, you know, I think, yeah, if you want to support, you know, your local indie, that would be great. But also I know that a lot of people just use Amazon because it's easier. So like, whatever. It would be really cool if people read it, you know, because I worked very, shut up, Brian. Trying to like,
Brian said, where should we get
Mark's semi-emotional plug? Because I worked really hard on it and I'm proud of it and I want people to read it. So yeah, please.
I saw Dave Vasse's review. and I thought that was wonderful. Like, and I wanted to add to it, you know, I've only read it through text messages and bits and pieces.
I sent you a copy. You're just like, oh no, Andy, sorry, I gotta edit power rankings.
No, that's when all this stuff was going on. But no, I read it. It's a great book. It is a great book. So I'm asking where to pre-order it because I've got a family friend back home, huge Dodger fan.
Sure.
Huge. And I would like you to sign one so I could send it back to him because like he reads your stuff. He'd be over the moon.
Yes, if you want a signed copy, the store Book Jewel in Los Angeles is doing it. I tweeted about this like a week or so ago, but it's I don't tweet anymore, so it should be easy to find. But if you pre-order through Book Jewel, I will sign it. I'll write you an inspirational message, you know, follow your dreams or, you know, whatever.
It probably won't be very inspirational. I'm not gonna
lie. All right. Well, we are almost out of time. Before we go, I have to read a quick commercial break. The Athletic Roundtable heads, you would love to read this book, The Last of His Kind, Clayton Kershaw and the Burden of Greatness. It's the definitive biography of Dodgers ace Clayton Kershaw, examining the genesis of his brilliance, his epic quest to win the World Series, and his singular place within the evolving baseball landscape based on exclusive interviews with Kershaw and more than 200 others. You can get it wherever books are sold. Buy it in a couple of weeks. Okay, we're back.
Wow.
Love
that.
That was nice, Grant. Thank you. Thank you.
Now do my book plug.
Roundtable heads, do you like holding absolutely nothing in your hand? Do you like air? Air is what keeps us alive. Oxygen, you can't live without it. Cup your hands right now and look at it. It's life force. It's Mark's book on the A's. You're looking at
it. Oh my God. Oh my God, dude, Grant. Dude, that was incredible. Man.
And we're back.
Oh wow.
That is excellent.
Grant, Blake Snell was just placed on the IL.
Yeah, I know. I know. So the Giants front office didn't get any votes, huh?
I tell you what, if we'd done this poll in the spring of 2022, the Giants would have gotten a lot
right,
of votes.
Right.
I mean, that's how ephemeral this
fickle,
stuff is, man.
Fickle like, business. You know, you're a fickle.
The Giants would have been top five, I bet.
You're a fickle boy, Mink.
That's an injury that's from out of nowhere, given that he started throwing like a week ago.
Yeah, right.
Isn't that sad? That sucks. Like, yeah, everybody knew. Like, given that scenario, like, signing so late, that there could be this. And, like, pitchers get hurt early anyway, but that's just another factor. And then, also, this is a guy who, like, you know, values knowing where he's going to be and, like, being able to settle in. Like, all of this, unfortunately, you could see coming. It's really a bummer. That sucks. You don't want to see people get hurt. But, like, in this particular case, it's just, like, I think it's terrible because you could see all the elements coming together, unfortunately.
Left adductor strain. That is an important muscle group located on your inner thigh that move your legs toward the center of your body. I didn't just Google that, but yeah, not great. All right. I think this has been episode 89. Oh, wait. Did you have one more thing to say, Andy? Or is that a like?
No, I was nodding like 89. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go 89. Woo. We will be back next week. It's Fabian's time in the MCU next week. So we'll see you then. We'll make fun of Mark. Well, I guess we do that anyways. Yeah, thanks for listening.
I mean, I guess I'd have to listen to it for it to register. But anyway, it'll be a 2-1.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you then.
I was very wrong.